Blog Talk Radio.
We're so glad that you tuned into the broadcast today. We have a very exciting broadcast. As we always say, it's one that's informative and dealing with current events. And we have a special guest that we're going to be talking with when she comes on the air, Ms. Hermelinda Cortez. She also is a technical advisor with the program and a consultant, community consultant from time to time. And we're just so glad that she's able to fill in and to help out with the program. She recently was in Brazil, and we're going to hear about why she went there and what was the purpose of it, and talk about the impact of that country after the Olympics that was there, because, you know, it brings millions, literally billions of dollars to that particular local country. And so we'll be talking about that and other good things. And so feel free to go call your friends, your neighbors, and tell them Straight Talk is on the air with Stan Macklin. And you can feel free to give us a call at 347-850-1598. That's 347-850-1598, and we'd be more than glad to talk to you about your concerns. So there's a lot that's going on in the news today. I'm sad to say and to report that we have another modern-day lynching that's going on in the form of the use of deadly force. You know, when back in the day when lynching was going on, the use of deadly force was the rope. Well, it's no longer the rope today, it's the gun. And in many cases, it's the gun of a law enforcement officer that shoots an unarmed black man, that's right, to death. And this has happened time after time after again. It's become a pattern. And we must speak out against this. We cannot allow this here to continue to exist in our country. And if it was in, I'll just be plain with it, if it was happening in the white community, they would call a national state of emergency. But why to happen in our urban communities across America? And it seems to be done in pairs. If it's one city, along comes another city. So we'll be talking about that. But we have on our program today, Ms. Cortez. Are you on the air?
I am here.
Well, we're so glad that you're on the air today. And it's always a joy to have you on the program. And
I'm always appreciated. Thank you, Stan. And I do want to apologize. I'm on the move, so hopefully it's not too noisy.
Yes, well, we're glad that you, well, that's kind of like you. You're a lady on the move as regional communications coordinator for SONG, which stands for Southerners on New Ground. You're always on the move, so that's really nothing new.
No, you're right about that. We are moving lots of different things across the U.S. South, and what that means is that we're also aligned with the global South around racial and economic justice issues, so we have our hands busy in these times, that is for sure.
That's wonderful. And tell us a little bit more about song before we get into your purpose for going to Brazil.
Certainly. So song is a 23-year-old racial justice organization. We were founded in 1992 by three black lesbians and three white lesbians who were committed to building out racial and economic justice work, the leadership of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and queer communities across the U.S. South, who have always historically brought leadership to social justice fights in the world, in our country, and in our region. And our particular organization was founded in an effort to provide a political home for LGBTQ people who are interested in racial and economic justice fights, to build leadership of those people, and to take their rightful place in the justice fights of our times.
Now, I like how you said a political home, and just basically the opportunity to be able to network together. Why is it that some people and I guess it does, because there is a period where some people have to evolve. It seems to be still challenging concerning LGBTQ rights. Why is it still such an issue for people?
Well, you know, I think, Stan, that there's a common misconception in the United States that post-gay marriage passing, that they're everything in the world of LGBTQ people is rainbows and unicorns, and we're just all having a party all the time. But the reality is that many LGBTQ people, especially those in the U.S. South, you know, and we're talking about at least one-third of the gay and lesbian and trans population in the United States is located in the U.S. South, and many of those folks are not white. So the issues that are concerning communities of color, black communities, immigrant communities across the board in this country are also affecting people who live at the intersections of those identities. So we've got undocumented lesbians, and we've got trans black women. And so all the issues that we're seeing around mass incarceration, around mass deportation, around killings from police, we are also seeing in our LGBTQ communities. And for those of us who are living at those intersections as LGBTQ people of color, especially those of us who are working class here in the U.S. South, we are concerned about all of these issues that are impacting black and brown communities across the board. And so we believe that LGBTQ issues aren't just about marriage. They're about what we call life and death issues, not just quality of life issues.
And, you know, I was amazed to know that a lot of members in the LGBTQ community have also been victims of police brutality. It just shows you that it's across the board. And I know that the movement is on the forefront concerning injustice and also in terms of acts of violence. And I think that whatever ways we can network together to curb any violence toward any segment of humanity is appropriate. And I want to commend you for your work in helping to educate and to enhance what you do across the South. So thank you so much for that. Now,
thank you, Sam.
You recently went to Brazil. And it was your first time there?
It was. You know, Stan, it was my first time out of the country besides going to Mexico, where my dad's family is from. My first time overseas. So, and I don't speak a word of Portuguese, Stan. Not a word.
Wow.
I can now say thank you.
Okay. So let's get into this here. Wonderful event that you had the opportunity to be a part of. What was your purpose for going to Brazil?
So I was blessed. I'm blessed to be working with Song, doing the work that I do. And Song was blessed to be given the opportunity for two of our staff members to attend what is known as the AWID Forum. and it stands for Association of Women in Development. And it's an international conference that happens every 3 years, I believe, of feminists and people working for women's rights all over the world. So the conference was about 2,000 people. It was in Saúde, Brazil, and it was women, straight and not straight, from all over the world who are working on the rights of women and girls, everything from poverty to education to food access to prison issues to immigration, really anything that you can name. This wonderful group of women were working on. And so part of our interest in going was to be able to talk to women from across the global South who are also working on LGBTQ issues, who are also working on immigration issues, who are also working on prison and policing issues, because those are the issues that our organization works on. And we really wanted to go learn, reflect on lessons and strategies from people all over the world, because we really think that we have a lot to learn.
Now, it had to be very empowering to see so many women from various different countries come together around those issues. How did you feel? What was the impact of that, of just being that you, as you said, and I think you said it in the beginning, you were blessed to be a participant. But just being in that atmosphere.
Yeah, you know, it was really interesting to be a participant, and, you know, I'm often the person leading the meeting or behind the strategy.
Right.
And so it was nice to kind of be able to sit and take it all in and be a participant.
Yes.
And to really just listen to what is happening for women all over the world, you know, because there were actually not that many women there who were based out of the U.S. So it was, I felt crucial for us to be able to reflect and learn from the work that women are doing all over the world. And I think that one of the things that was a clear takeaway for me was the spiritual calling that is happening worldwide right now to center the fights for our dignity and for our lives. They are happening all over the world. And it was really inspiring to see people working on these issues through the toughest of conditions without any money, but a lot of heart and a lot of gut to do what they feel is right for their communities, you know. So it was really beautiful to see all of these women coming together, you know, to hear, you know, multiple languages spoken in a space, you know. But it also meant that we saw some conflict arise, right? It was really interesting to talk to women about what they thought was happening in the U.S. right now, what was happening to black people in the U.S. right now, what's happening with our presidential election right now, and getting their perspective of what the impact of those things were going to be also around the globe. You know, and so some of those tensions were coming up, and I think it was really good. I think it's good for us to engage in hard dialogue and conflict and about the impact of U.S. policy around the world and what we're doing in the U.S. to help mitigate that damage.
Now, there were, as you said, it was an international conference and focusing on women's rights and dealing with various issues from poverty to food issues. What were some of the standout issues that related to you? Because I know you probably didn't get in the whole spectrum of the conference, but there were certain aspects that appealed to you. What was it that kind of just really touched your heart in a way that that motivates you to do more?
Yeah, you know, I think that everybody was asking this question of what is the responsibility of us in this time, and what is the role of our spiritual selves in this time and doing this work for justice? That felt like a resonating call across all the different issues. And really, you know, I think the thing that struck me the most And this is some things I knew going into the conference. I'm sorry about that beeping. Hopefully it'll stop here in a minute.
Mm-hmm.
There we go. Was, you know, connecting with LGBTQ people around the world and seeing some of the policies and the fights that they are working on in this current time, and the role of the U.S. religious right Christian wing in
mm-hmm,
perpetuating
mm-hmm.
some of the policies that they've moved in the U.S. around the world. You know, and I think it was also telling to me that people around the world do not understand what is happening with policing of black people in the U.S. at this time.
Mm.
And so it was
okay.
eye-opening and enlightening to be able to have a mirror held up for those of us who live in the U.S., both black and not black, who are working on these issues, to have a mirror held up and say, what is happening in your country? Why has this taken so long? You know,
right.
and also seeing the impacts of, in the U.S., the legacy of slavery is our current state of affairs of police murdering and killing and lynching black people. But the
yes.
impacts of slavery and colonization doesn't necessarily look like that around the world, but there are impacts of that slavery and colonization elsewhere. You know, so I think it was interesting to kind of be able to reflect with folks our current conditions didn't just magically appear, that they came from a place and a time and are carried on that legacy of violence. And we really have to wrestle as a global community with how we're wanting the role of the state and the role of government to interact with our communities and as people. And I think that there's a lot of questions about what that means around the world right now. From people who are living under dictatorship regimes to people who
mm-hmm.
are living in Latin and South America, who are living under left governments that were put in by the people who are now economically struggling, to people in the U.S. who are asking the role and the question of the U.S. government in this time in this current election.
Now, that is very profound, and the scope of how you explain that, because we here in the U.S., we become localized, and if we're able to break out of that local context and have a regional perspective or even a national perspective, which current events helps us to kind of foster that, we have a tendency to not think about what other countries think about what's going on in our country. And that was quite interesting, as you brought out about they don't understand, because I'm sure they don't understand. Here's a country that's touted as a country of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, where there's liberty. The Statue of Liberty stands there, welcome them all. And immigrants have come here from all nationalities and have made a home here, but yet we see this one segment of society, primarily people of color, black and brown, who are being really shot systematically as a pattern across the country time after time.
That's
and,
right.
Knowing the history of slavery and what went on in that, that would have to be kind of a concern to those of different countries. So that was a good perspective that I quite never thought about when you mentioned that. And did you find a lot of the internationals giving you questions and concerns about that particular patterns that exist in our country?
You know, I think, Sam, more of what I heard from people around the world was that we in the U.S. do not understand enough of what our government is doing around the world and how they are making life incredibly difficult for a lot of people in a lot of places. And there was this very, very heavy and deep anti-U.S. sentiment. And
can you give an example?
It was.
Can you give an example?
Yeah, I think just, you know, everything from, so for example, quite often with other people based in the U.S., you know, we were having lots of conversations about the upcoming presidential election, and the eternal debate for many of us who work on social justice issues is, of course, we don't want to vote for Donald Trump, and we really also don't want to vote for Hillary Clinton. What
mm-hmm.
strategic choice do we actually make in this time? And the station was obviously in conjunction with people who live in other parts of the world, and people asking us the question, well, what are you going to do under a Clinton presidency? Secretary of State who has enacted quite a few trade deals and has not been a friend to justice movements around the world over
mm-hmm.
the course of her career. And so this real question coming up of what do leftists and social justice practitioners and organizers and leaders in the U.S. really think the solution is, given that these are two options, right, and people feeling very, very strongly that neither one of these options are a good option, and feeling a particular type of way about Hillary Clinton because of her history around the world and her policies.
Mm-hmm.
And so
mm-hmm.
it was interesting to have this kind of cross-global, cross-country debate about what does our leadership in this time need to look like when we're dealing with governments that are facades of democracy, when our election system isn't actually set up democratically, right? Explaining to people the U.S. has some of the lowest voter turnout in the world, right?
Mm.
People looking at you bug-eyed when you say, you know, this is the percentage, when they say, well, in my country, because we lived under a dictatorship, the voter turnout is 90% at every election, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, every country has, you know, has its problems, you know, but I think that we in the U.S. also have much to learn from democratic practices that are
mm-hmm.
happening in countries all over the world, and we really need to look at ourselves and question our own democracy and what we need to put in place to make sure that our elections are fair and equal and that we actually have the leadership that reflects what our communities are trying to earn.
Mm-hmm. Now, I know that as you talk about democracy, that there was some political changes with the, I guess it was the prime minister, our country president, something.
Yes,
I don't know
in Brazil. Yes, that just happened.
Yeah.
So it was quite a
mm-hmm.
hot topic. Yes, so the prime minister in Brazil who was democratically elected, I believe
mm-hmm.
she was the first female prime minister in Brazil as well.
Yes.
Got ousted from what I know and from organizers that I talk to, from right-wing forces within the country. And, you know, I think it's very deeply connected to economic decisions that were made around both the World
mm-hmm.
Cup and around the Olympics about the type of money that came into the country that wasn't being spent appropriately, not
wow.
by her. But, you know, there was a lot of questions of financial resourcing, but I think that a lot of people saw that she was being attacked specifically because she was a woman and that she was being unfairly targeted because she was the first female prime minister. You know, and I think that in conjunction with that, the other major conversation that was happening while I was in Brazil was this conversation about the relationship of that ousting with the relationship of how women in the country are being treated because of the Zika virus. The,
mm-hmm.
the right-wing forces within Brazil are using the Zika outbreak to
mm-hmm.
with some women around reproductive access and care. And this is one of the conversations that is not being talked about outside of Brazil. When the world is looking, the Brazilian government has been responsible for squashing the conversation to say no. There is actually not a problem here because we want you to come spend your dollars on the Olympics. And so there was a lot of local organizers, a lot of women throughout the country of Brazil who were at the conference who were basically telling us, open your eyes, you know, you need to see the real story of what's happening. And also understand the massive amounts of organizing and resistance coming out of Brazil to a government that is quite frankly just not listening to the basic needs of the people.
Wow. Now, you know you visited Brazil right after the Olympics.
That's right.
Did you notice any impact? Because billions of dollars were spent just to host that. And
yeah, you know, so the part of Brazil that I was in did not directly host any of the Olympic Games, but it was very evident at the airports in Brazil that I went through, both in Sao Paulo and in Rio de Janeiro. You know, you could very clearly tell when you got to the airport that things had been specifically arranged for that. You know, even the fact that U.S. citizens going to Brazil during a certain time period didn't have to apply for a visa, right? Those very basic things. But I think that what I heard the most and saw the impact the most was from women who were living in Brazil who were saying, this is the impact on our country because this was here. Millions and millions of dollars spent on this World Cup or this Olympic infrastructure. Meanwhile, teachers and public service workers and transportation workers and sanitation workers all across the board aren't being paid. People don't have access to basic things that they need in terms of medical care and education and the like. And the people of Brazil demanding that the government be spending those resources not on building stadiums that will be empty, you know, once the games are over, but on long-term infrastructure that actually supports the people who live there.
Wow, that is very, very insightful because a lot of people just don't understand that at the local level within those countries, sometimes it's situations that are unbearable for people and which resort to some illegal behavior and activities. And from my understanding that people have to be really on the alert to not have their valuables or things that they possess taken from them because the thing of the have versus the have not is reality.
I think that's right. And, you know, Dan, I think that too often when people talk about it, you know, or talk about traveling outside of the U.S., people will do this thing where, oh, watch your back. You know, there's a lot of crime there. But the real conversation that we need to have is people who are visiting these places for all kinds of different reasons is that it is a reality that there are survival economies, just like in the U.S., where people are doing what they need to do to get by, and that, of course, does not sanction bad behavior, but we have to understand what's happening in that context. You know, if you've got entire neighborhoods that were wiped out, you know, due to stadiums being built, what else can you expect but for people to resort to survival economies to literally just get by and to feed themselves?
True. So true. Now, let's ask some question to stir some answers about how was your the food you ate, your travel, how were the police, how was interaction with daily people?
You know,
what was that like?
Brazilians are very friendly. The food that I had in some places was very bland, and then the food I had in other places was delicious. There were coconuts everywhere. and so, you know, I was in Sauipe, which was a little bit removed from a lot of things. But then I was in Salvador, Brazil, which was the largest slave exporting state in Brazil. And so a lot of that history was there, and it was really amazing to be able to visit a lot of those places and to see also the resistance of black people in Brazil.
Well, our time is up, and that's a good way to end the program. You had a fantastic time, learned a lot, experienced a lot, and you bring that back. So we're so glad to have had Hermelinda Cortez with us on today's Straight Talk, and we're glad you're back, and may God continue to use you as you share forth the good news. Thank you for listening today. This has been Stan Macklin with Straight Talk. And remember, whatever you're going through is not the outlook, but it's the uplook that makes the difference. Have a good day.